Welcome to JAG Talk, a podcast series featuring Navy JAG community experts. Listen to in-depth discussions about different legal fields and hear insights and lessons learned from practitioners across our enterprise.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of our podcast. I'm Lieutenant Greg Lines. Today's episode is going to be a good one, folks. We've put together an all-star lineup of guests who are coming to answer, inter alia, the question, VLCs, where are they now? Make sure your headphones are charged. Here we go. All right. Well, my next guest today is Lieutenant Commander Jared Franks, who's joining us from Arlington, Virginia. Welcome, Lieutenant Commander Franks.
Hey, Greg. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, there may or there may not be a conspiracy afoot. So you are also a native of Phoenix, Arizona. Is that right?
That's correct. I went to Brophy College Preparatory right in Central Phoenix. So
I swam against Brophy, and it was one of the most soul-crushing experiences of my life.
Yeah, they still have a bit of a dynasty there, but you know, I had no idea, you know, Arizona being landlocked and all, that we'd have a fairly decent-sized footprint in the Navy JAG Corps of fellow Arizonans. I know we got a couple folks from Tucson and a couple folks from Phoenix, and it's good. I tend to think
it's
very highly of
we all try to escape the heat in the desert, right? And so it's the service where we can't go back.
Yeah, you find out about all these bases near beaches and in cooler climates, and you jump at the chance.
So, you know, Phoenix, terribly hot, but we love it. Kind of moving to your background, could you kind of just walk us through real quick kind of your JAG Corps journey? Like what jobs have you had up to this point?
So I started out in Bremerton at the Navy Legal Service Office, the NILSO. And at the time, first job was legal assistance. And I did a little bit of defense work. And at about the year mark, I volunteered to go on an IA to Afghanistan. Went to CGATA 435 for about 9 months and followed that first tour by going to the Region Legal Service Office in Japan, now RILSA Westpac, and was a prosecutor for a year, trial counsel, and then served as the assistant judge advocate to Commander Naval Forces Japan. And then from there, I went to Naval Special Warfare. I had always wanted to, you know, after being in Afghanistan, wanted to work alongside them, because we had worked, you know, some of the cases that they had brought, some of the detainees they had brought to us in Afghanistan. So wanted to see what that community was like, and served with Naval Special Warfare Group 2 in Virginia Beach for 2 years, deployed a couple times to Africa, doing some security assistance deployments in Eastern Africa based out of Djibouti. And from there, you know, I was newly married to another judge advocate, and she was stationed at the Naval Academy on staff there. And at the time we were, you know, on about to detail, and they came to me with this opportunity to join VLC. Wasn't sure at the time if that was, you know, the right decision for me, given that I had a, you know, interest in doing more national security law, but talked to some folks and they thought it would be an awesome opportunity, and looked at the opportunities for Joey and me to live together. And they dangled a little slice of paradise called Pearl Harbor in front of us both. And we decided to jump at the chance. And that's how I ended up at VLC for 3 years. More about that. But following on VLC, I went to school at Georgetown for an LLM and then went to a carrier strike group and did that for 2 years. And now I'm at the Navy Office of Legislative Affairs, serving as a legislative counsel and liaison.
Wow, quite the history. And it's interesting to note, you know, Pearl Harbor, it gets you every time. Well, without further ado, let's kind of dig into some of our questions for today. So when you were told that you were going to be a victim's legal counsel, how did you feel about that? What were your kind of first impressions?
Admittedly, I was a little nervous, hadn't been in court in quite a while, hadn't really represented a whole lot of clients in any capacity. I had had some defense some time with defense in my first tour, but most of it was just PERS reps, the occasional ad set board. And you know, I think I went into court once or twice, and, you know, for dives and things of that nature. I hadn't done a contested court martial, and I had done a couple as a trial counsel, but it had been years, and I understood that the practice was new. The law was to some degree, you know, being made as we went. I know some of the predecessors in the program were really, you know, the plank owners were the ones that really helped shape the law and our ability to practice in court. But I knew it was going to be a challenge, and I didn't have the background in litigation. So I was admittedly a little bit nervous. But I thought the opportunity to represent clients and to have that one-on-one relationship with folks and to be able to help them was something that interested me. It was an opportunity that I knew that as a lawyer, I think all of us at some point want to be able to make a difference. And, you know, direct representation offers you that. So that part excited me. But I, you know, would be lying if I said I wasn't a little bit nervous and to some degree scared to get back in there and be the one person representing somebody that's really relying on you.
Right. Yeah. So kind of a little bit of mixed emotions. What did you find to be kind of the most appealing things about the job for you?
I gotta say that the idea that the JAG Corps was entrusting me and others to go, and it was a high visibility program, it was a challenge, and that we had a lot of folks looking at what we were doing, and while they were very much supportive of our success, I think that, you know, the challenge of it, just, hey, like, the eyes are going to be on you and your colleagues to get this right and to represent clients and their needs and to make sure that you guys are fighting for them every day. That part was inspiring, but it absolutely interested me. Like, I wanted to be part of something that was new. I liked the idea that there was still folks that were kind of detracting from the program. I don't think that that's still the case. I think that there's overwhelming respect for what everybody is doing for victims and for the program and for the Navy and our mission of helping sailors. But I think at the time there was detractors, and I liked the idea of kind of being on the opposite end of that, and to, you know, the idea that you're going to be able to prove people wrong, that we have a place within the JAG Corps, within the Navy, and that it's going to be a critical part of the practice of what we do. And I absolutely wanted to be part of that, supporting it, driving it forward.
Definitely is something that would be appealing. Kind of high stakes, right? Very visible, high stakes, and very meaningful, kind of on the individual level, like you were saying. So during your experience with the program, what were some of like the biggest challenges that you faced personally? Like, did you, you know, was the work itself difficult? Did you find that there were, you know, unique legal challenges? Kind of what was your experience that way?
I would say that, again, certainly rusty and by no means an expert in litigation. I think ultimately we have our strengths, our weaknesses, and the things that we're practiced in. And, you know, we were serving with some folks that were, no kidding, hotshot litigators, me not being one of them. So I think just, I probably had a larger learning curve. I absolutely had a larger learning curve than some of my peers. You know, as we're talking about trial strategy, you know, victims legal counsel have trial strategies as well. You know, they're limited in scope, but at the end of the day, you have to find out, based on what your client asks you to do, directs you to do as, you know, the person in charge, how am I going to achieve those goals? A lot of times it's not even in the litigation, but a lot of times, you know, when the direction is that they want to be able to achieve a certain result in litigation, it's your job as the expert, you know, as their lawyer to try and get it done. So the challenge for me was to kind of get back into that mindset, to get back into a field that I was not as familiar with as some of my peers, and to achieve those things. And I can tell you, it wasn't always easy, but thankfully there was a great support network, and there was a lot of smart people, much smarter than me, that I could always rely on to help me with sanity checks and to give very very good advice when I didn't always see the clearest path, or I couldn't diagnose it myself.
When I think what we've heard earlier today, everybody brings different strengths and experience to the program, right? So for someone like yourself, right, maybe you were able to help
other VLCs who had less SJA experience, because a lot of the work happens outside of the courtroom, right? And working with clients and their commands and whatnot. So was that your experience as well? Kind of like there's a give and take from everybody, kind of with different experiences and specialties.
I certainly like to think that that was the case. I mean, there was times where folks reached out and having an understanding of, I guess, to some degree, the fleet mindset, for lack of a better term, does inform, you know, a trial strategy, does inform an engagement strategy. Because a lot of times we are advocating with the commands outside of the courtroom, trying to get things done before, you know, it gets to a charging phase or a court-martial phase, or even when you're just advocating on behalf of your client for something that the command controls. I believe having that SJA experience, having that background working with the fleet, absolutely, I think was a skill set that helped me and I try to leverage in helping others. And also just understanding how those folks think on the operational side, I think will lead to better and more fruitful conversations and advocacy. And I'm hopeful, at least I can speak to all the times that I was helped. I'd like to think that there was times that I reciprocated that all the assistance I got from others. So I think after 3 years, that would be my greatest hope, aside from the fact that my clients, that, you know, that they felt that I helped push the ball forward for them, that I was also able to push the ball forward or support my peers pushing the ball forward, fellow VLCs.
Yeah. In terms of the work itself, kind of the daily grind of it, did you feel that like kind of weighed on you over time? Was it something that was easy to manage, or did you struggle with that at all?
I mean, there's always tough days at the office. There was times where things didn't work out as you hope they would, or as your client hoped that they would. I 3 years in the program, you're going to have wins and some losses, good days and bad days. I would say that the chain of command that I had at the time was incredible. We always had a very collegial atmosphere in the office. I had at the time Lieutenant Commander, then Commander Jen Fraser as my OIC. Before I moved up to the OIC role, I had, you know, Liz Jarzik and Yokosuka. You know, great folks all over the country, back Conus, Charlotte Claverius, people that, I mean, legitimately were always there when you needed something. So I think the work-life balance and the ability to talk to folks through challenging times alleviated some of the difficulty. But yeah, there undoubtedly was tough days. I mean, granted, you know, not everybody had the opportunity to go run on the beach in Hawaii to clear their head like the folks and Pearl did, but, you know, you're dealing with heavy stuff. You're dealing with clients that are traumatized and that transfers to you, especially when you feel that, you know, you really want to achieve something on their behalf. And if you fell short, there was times that, you know, that weighed on me, some sleepless nights, some times that I just, you know, wished I could go back in time and change a decision or strategize a little differently. I think that's any job, but the human aspect of this job, I think, weighs a little heavier.
Yeah. And now, as you kind of look back on it, how did VLC play a role in kind of the rest of your career trajectory?
Well, it certainly taught me a lot of humility, healthy dose of humility, for a lot of reasons, right? It just puts things in perspective. When I mentioned having bad days at the office, I would venture to say that I never had a day that was as bad as some of the days that my clients went through and the aftermath of the trauma they were exposed to. So it gave me a perspective. It taught me a lot of empathy. And I'd like to think that coming into the program, I didn't have an empathy deficit, but I certainly gained the ability to empathize and to see people for the struggles that they bring to the table. And I think that helped me as a leader when just, you know, engaging with sailors and peers and even superiors in terms of, you know, when somebody comes to a conversation or an engagement and you might not necessarily be on the same plane or there might be difficulty in communication, you know, it's taught me how to look a little deeper and try to understand where a person is coming from and perhaps the genesis of why they feel a certain way about a topic. Like it just has it. It's taught me the humility and the empathy to look at the people that I engage with and try to understand them so that I can more effectively communicate for them. And that helps in whatever advocacy or engagement I'm doing in all my current jobs. And I don't think I ever got it to the extent that I was able to learn from those experiences at BLC.
And looking back, for you specifically as kind of more of the SJ type, how did you feel that the experience aided or, enriched your kind of toolkit as a staff judge advocate?
I think absolutely. Just from the get-go, it's a credibility builder. When folks know that you have that in your background, people understand that you've done something different. And in a lot of the work we do now at OLA, or even advising folks at the strike group when we're talking about sex assault investigations, they know that I've worked in now every aspect of it, and I've seen all the different sides. So they know when I am advising on something like that, that I'm able to calculate and scrutinize kind of all positions on that, defense, government, and the victim. And it's certainly in my current job at OLA, we deal a lot in sexual assault policy, sexual harassment policy, and we just deal in a lot of issues that impact sailors. And I think having that experience working directly with sailors, some of the ones that have been through some of the greatest trauma, it just brings a certain credibility to the table. Like I've worked amongst this, I've helped folks that are going through this. But most importantly, it drives me not to forget those folks that there's still advocacy for the folks that need our help the most in leadership positions to continue advocating for them you've seen the worst of what can happen to somebody. And I've had leaders that say, never forget those experiences when you're at the table talking to folks, because you can still advocate for them. You can still try and make their situation better, even if you're not detailed to them as counsel, because you know their perspective and you know that trauma is real and it's impacting what they are going through on a day-to-day basis, and it informs what they may need to help them get back and to get to a state of readiness and to get back into the fight fully functioning.
For people who are maybe considering doing a tour as a VLC, what would your advice be to them in whether or not to take that position?
I would say, I would say don't hesitate, but first evaluate where you are at in your life and in your career. And I think we always hope that we can all aspire and work towards being a servant leader. But if you are not in a position where you're able to be that servant leader, that you are willing to truly invest yourself in being the full-time advocate for the people that you are about to represent, you should consider that, it might not be the right time for you, because I think to succeed in this job, you have to have that as the foundation. You have to be willing to say that these folks, I'm going to put them first. And, I think they deserve that type of commitment. And I think if you are willing and able to do that, the job will be all the more rewarding, and you'll be able to achieve what I think that folks hope for when they set this program up and they launched it. I frankly think that if those are questions that you've been able to ask yourself and answer in a positive way, there shouldn't be anything holding you back, because it's so rewarding. And more importantly, like I can't speak to the community there, but I suspect it's one of the best groups we have in the JAG Corps, because it's I assume people that are all of the like mindset, that they're ready to serve, they're ready to move the ball forward, and they're ready to make the Navy a better place for the folks that need it the most. And that makes for a hell of a command and a hell of a community to work with.
And I think it's interesting, this idea of, it's really important if you're considering that billet, that it's not just about you, right? It can't just be, what am I going to get out of this? And kind of, you have to maintain the perspective of, what am I doing for these people? How can I use that experience to grow personally, But instead of viewing it as like a box to check or, you know, what am I getting out of it? Do your best where you are, right? You make the most of the opportunity that you have. And the way that you do that in that job is really caring about the people that you are representing.
Yeah, I think that that's a fair, more than fair way of framing it. It's true. I mean, ultimately, we are there to provide a service to folks that need it. And that's foundational. And if that is not your primary commitment to the job, I don't know necessarily that you're a good fit, but if it is, you know, the world is your oyster. It's going to be an awesome tour. You're going to be surrounded by awesome people doing a critical mission, and you're going to grow and become a better leader, a better advocate, and I think a better person from doing it.
So for you, I mean, you were already in OIC, so there's not really anything that you could come back to VLC and do, right? Except maybe, you know, at a higher echelon. But, you know, hypothetically speaking, one day, would that be something that you were interested in coming back to the program?
I've already talked to Charlotte Claverius. If there's ever an opportunity for me to go back, she needs to absolutely let me know. I tell folks this, and it's not a platitude. I think once you're part of the VLC family, you're a member for life. And I think that, like I said, there's advocacy you can do on behalf of the program, whether it's recruiting good folks or finding ways when you're at a position like OLA to continue driving the mission forward, whether it's advocating for the things that the program may need, singing its praises to folks that might not yet be familiar with the value that it adds, or if an opportunity comes up in the department where there's policy that might drive the ball forward on behalf of victims or behalf of the victim's legal counsel, you do it. So I think you're a team member for life. It's a fantastic group. It's a unique group. It's a practice that didn't even exist when I joined the Navy, but so glad that it did. And frankly, if the opportunity to come back was there, I imagine that I would think long and hard about doing it and would probably find myself headed back if given the opportunity.
So as the program comes into its kind of 10-year anniversary, do you have any kind of thoughts, perspectives you want to share on kind of how the program has been and where it is today?
Well, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that from its inception to where we are now, it's grown. The fleet sees the value in it. It's increased in billets and it's increased in mission. The feedback that we got when I was in the program, and I suspect that they still get, is that there's a extremely high amount of victim satisfaction, client satisfaction, that people are saying that they are glad that they have retained victims' legal counsel to support them, and that the program adds immense value. And I think that that has only grown with time. But what is most telling is that the mission has expanded, you know, from, you know, its first year to now, you know, probably double the billets, you know, the domestic violence piece of the mission. I just think that ultimately that those speak to the value that has been added and that the mission not only is needed, but it's appreciated at the highest levels of the Department of Defense. And I think that expansion is pretty much across the board for all the services. But speaking to the Navy, I mean, the expansion is real. Mission people, and as a result, sailors that have benefited, most importantly.
Well, sir, thank you again so much for, you know, taking time out of your day to talk with us and share your perspective. It's so fascinating to hear kind of experience of everybody from the different periods that they served. And hopefully, you know, we'll continue to see good things as we go into the second decade of the program.
Well, thank you for having me. It was certainly my pleasure.
You have been listening to JAG Talk, a podcast series featuring Navy JAG community experts. Visit jag.navy.mil for additional chapters of this podcast series. Thank you for tuning in.